The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 378.
And we are having to record separately. And my God, when we're separate, Carrie gets on my damn nerves.
And when we're together, Donna gets on my damn nerves.
It's because I'm not there to rein her in. And so she touches everything. She does everything. What are you doing? Drumming? Like... I had to take a busy bar.
I said, are you taking another Buse bar? You are addicted.
I haven't taken one. Well, I mean, I have taken my dosage today, like in the morning, but I have a nighttime one.
Oh.
Well, I want to start out by saying, hate Carrie, but love my relationship.
Y'all, Donna has a boyfriend.
And I just want to say thank y'all so freaking much for all the love. Chris was overwhelmed. He was like, holy shit, look at all the people, because we're Facebook official now, if you don't know.
Even my mom commented on your Facebook official, was like, congratulations.
Aw, yeah.
Oh, you haven't read all of the comments yet, Donna?
I tried. When did she comment?
I'm just kidding.
Because I've been hearting everything I can.
I'm just kidding, but she did. I saw it today.
Aw, yeah, I need to go back to it. And I'm like, oh my God, thank y'all so much for... just supporting and loving me. And I mean, it's all about me. You know what I mean?
I was going to say us, but okay.
Well, they love me. They don't know him.
But they're supporting y'all as a couple.
More so me, though.
I have a friend that's a freaking Leo, they said.
Oh, speaking of Leo, now I can tell y'all, like when I'm like, I'm with some, like I was with someone and I said this, it was Chris. But me and Chris were at our local, like, restaurant that me and Carrie love so much. And I always get the chicken quesadilla with extra jalapenos. I don't know what was in those jalapenos, but they were extra spicy. And because normally I get the double because I can't taste the normal jalapenos. I don't know what they did, but they were super spicy. Even Chris was like, I honestly didn't know they had jalapenos in here. Until now. And one, like, I don't know, like, it was just burning my throat. And I was like, you know, and there was a guy and his son, like a little son, I don't know, 7 years old, could be 2 to 7 around that age.
You're really bad with ages, ages and weights.
Yeah, terrible. Honestly, I have no idea. A young tot, you know, a wee tot. And he said, like, was that spicy or was that hot? And I turned around because I have my back to him. And I was like, yeah, it was. You weren't talking to me. Okay. Yeah. He was talking to his kid. And Chris was like, not everyone is talking to you.
No.
And I was like, okay, well, one, that was very timely that I'm like dying over here. And he's like, was it spicy? And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, ugh, I'm a Leo to the core.
I thought you were going to say I'm a loser. So, yes, both.
Oh, I mean, also that.
Wow.
But I have to tell you one more thing, and then I'll stop the Donna monologue.
Does that ever stop? I didn't know.
You know what? But Birdie went to the vet today to be groomed, okay? Because her original groomers, they have tried and they've tried and they've tried. But, like, the last time she was... not having it because she's gotten on like stronger medication or doubled the dose. And I think that's just made her more uneasy because she's like not out of it, but out of it enough that she's like, whoa, what's going on? We were like, she's probably going to need to be sedated to get a groom. And so I called the vet and they're like, yeah, okay. So schedule it. go, and I tell them this morning, like, they said they might have to sedate her. So, like, you know, like, that's what I'm here for, you know? I pick her up today, and they said, oh, they didn't sedate her. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good. But I didn't give her her full dosage because I didn't want her to be, like, on that and then them sedate her, you know what I mean? Or say, oh, we can't sedate her, and she's just there all day, and I can't get her, right? It was not clearly communicated.
Yeah. Well, I would think that you need to give her her full dose because they're expecting her to have taken her medicine, and they would give her her sedation based on the medicine that she's on.
Well, I don't know. In my head, that I was like, well, because I, when I go to the doctor, sometimes they tell me, like, don't take my full thing because I don't know.
Well, because they know you did that, though. They told you to do that. The vet didn't know that.
Well, I don't know. It should have been better communicated, me and them. But, like, I called and said, my dog needs to be sedated. Like, yeah, she can't be groomed, but not sedated. So I'm like, well, they didn't call. So that's a good sign. You know, she's like, okay, I'm going to go get the groomer. And I've met him before because he's a tech there as well. And he came out by himself. So I said, well, this isn't going to be good. So we, you know, talk, and he said, we didn't get her great. Like, we got her. We did it. We completed it. But he had to have a lot of help. And she definitely did not like the clippers, you know, like all the things I know. And he said, and I'm not going to have that help all the time. So this will be the only time that I can ever groom her. So she can't come back for grooming. And so I was like, okay, you know, and he told me maybe to try mobile grooming or the bigger place that's connected to them, like in Hattiesburg, though, not in Petal. He said that they will do like gas and intubate them, but it's really expensive. And so I was like, okay. And he then hugged me and said, you're doing God's work. Like, what happened? And he said, like, she was fine through the bath, you know, and everything. And she was just not with it. But he didn't tell me they muzzled her or anything like that. And they did tell someone else that they muzzled, you know. So I'm like, did they not? I don't know. Because she's not reactive in a mean way. She's reactive in, like, fling herself off the table way. Like, she, like, self-harms.
What the fuck?
But he hugged me and said, you're doing God's work. But Birdie, like, when she came out, she, like, licked him, you know, like, I don't understand. She was like, it's cool. I don't know what we're going to do with her to be groomed.
But, yeah, because she has to be groomed. Like, the yeah, kind of dog that she, it's not like my bulldogs. Like, I could just never groom them and they'd be fine.
Yeah. I think I'm going to just ask her original groomers, like, if they'll just scissor her, because she's okay with that for the most part, and just, like, keep her shorter. And that way they don't have to worry about buzzing her or anything. But I have no idea. Like, I shaved Chris's head and she's in there with us with the buzzers. So it's not the sound.
That dog's a skinwalker.
I don't know. But he said, you're doing God's work. Like, they might have had an exorcism.
She's miserable.
I know. But happy as a clam, like, you know, with just me. But any other. Anything.
I bet she was, like, fit to be tied at her other house. Because it was, like, a couple with a toddler.
Yeah.
Had they had their second baby yet?
No, she was to have her second baby. And they, you know, they lived on, like, a busy street and stuff. So I don't know how Birdie did with the noise and stuff, mm-hmm. you know? Because she is an alert dog. But I love her so much. And, like, I just want her to be more calm, you know, for her sake. Because I know when I'm nervous, like, when I'm, like, anxiety riddled, yeah. you know, like, that kind, which is what she is, you know, she paces, she does all the things. If someone else is here, that's what she's going to do. Like, I know how I get, and I'm like, oh, I'm tired, like, after the day, because I'm just not, I'm never settled, you know? Yeah.
This past weekend was our anniversary. 3 years. Can you believe it's been 3 freaking years?
No.
And
5 total, huh?
6.
6, okay.
And we went to a baseball game to this, well, I don't know if it's semi-pro or professional. I don't know what it is. It's like a double-A baseball. And they feed into the Brewers. Like this, it's called the Shuckers. Anyway, so we went to one of the baseball games. And we were having, you know, we had a good time. We actually got to see one of our, you know, Southern Miss, our team here. We got to see one of the former players that we loved was actually they were actually on the opposing team. And then our current players, his brother's on the team that we saw, you know, which we knew that. But anyway, but I was sitting there in my seat. We got really great seats and because it's not much. It's, you know, they're not very expensive. And we had like really great seats. And I was right. My seat was like right by like where players walk out because we were like sitting basically on top of their dugout. And I was like, I smell a dryer, like a laundry dryer. And I was like, I feel heat and like a fabric softener, you know, like a dryer smells.
Yeah.
I was like, I smell a dryer. And I was like, do you smell that? And Colby was like, no, wait, yes. And then like the whole game, like every couple of minutes, he would be like, somebody's doing laundry. Like we would just smell this dryer again.
What the fuck?
I have no idea where it was coming from, what it was. I still don't know, but it was like a very distinct. Someone is doing laundry. Someone is doing has a dryer on. Like you know,
what
if you're
the hell?
You know the smell and the feel, like where your dryer vent goes outside your house, mm-hmm. like how it's like the hot air coming out and it smells.
Yeah,
it was exactly that. Like we were standing on the outside of a dryer vent, and I'm like, now I know they're not doing that much laundry here. Like with the you know the baseball players' uniforms or whatever. Like what could they possibly be doing this much laundry with? And then Colby was like, because the casino is across the street. He was like, I wonder if they have like a something that they do laundry. I don't know. I still don't know what the fuck it was, though. But every so often, we just smell a dryer. I'm so glad he smelled it because I was like, I'm losing my brain. Like, is this the equivalent of I smell toast? I smell a dryer?
Well, hopefully it was refreshing.
No, it was hot. It was fucking almost 100 degrees outside. No, I don't need a hot-ass dryer vent. We had fun. We went to this restaurant, and I stopped to tool it up.
What restaurant?
Reef's. Can't ever go back there. It's like the Mexican restaurant in Laurel. I can't go back there either.
The toilet bandit. Oh, God.
It was really good, too, damn it.
Lord.
This is what happens when I don't have a bidet.
Why didn't you take your travel bidet?
I forgot it at work.
Oh, Lord. You just need to invest in like 8.
Like, seriously, though. Well, before we get into my story, we have to talk about GoPure. Because, well, this episode is sponsored by GoPure. And let me just say, we've both been very familiar with our double chins for a long time.
Oh, you know those moments when you're taking a selfie and you're like, oh no, that's not the angle. Especially when you go to turn the camera around and you see it from the down angle. You know what I'm talking about. Mostly Snapchat. It would always get me.
It's usually the upward angle for me. But we spend all this time and money on skincare for our face, like serums, moisturizers, like the whole routine, and completely ignore the neck and the jawline.
And the skin on our neck is thinner, more delicate. It needs its own special attention. And that's where GoPure comes in.
Their Titan and Lift Neck Cream has been such a surprise favorite. I didn't expect to be that into neck cream, but I've been using it and I'm like, no, this is legit.
No, seriously, not only does it feel better, like I touch my neck and I'm like, who is she? She feels so soft and smooth. And now it's part of my nighttime routine.
The formula is dermatologist recommended, cruelty-free, paraben-free, sulfate-free. It's packed with this proprietary firming complex that in a study left 100% of the users saying that their skin looked more supple.
And I want to be supple. Then also 97% noticed a firmer appearance in just a few weeks. So basically, I feel like I've got the neck of my dream, you know, working its way in. Finally catching up with all the other work I'm trying to do on my face.
I'm new to this whole skincare journey, And I am like, no, y'all heard me say this before. When you see people spending a ton of money to get their face done and all of that, you can always tell on the neck. That's why you got to treat it right with some GoPure. But GoPure isn't just about neck cream. They got a whole line of science-backed skincare that delivers real results. But if you're like us and the neck has always been that one spot that you just didn't know what to do with, this is it. This is where it's at.
So here's the deal. Tighten, lift, and restore elasticity in your neck. Because like Carrie said, your skincare routine should not stop at your jawline.
So our listeners can get 25% off at GoPure. Just head to GoPureBeauty.com and use the promo code APC at checkout.
That's GoPureBeauty.com and the promo code is APC.
And when they ask where you heard about GoPure, tell them it was from your favorite true crime and paranormal obsessed podcasters. Well, my story this week is from a recommendation on our Discord server from Save Bandit. So this is the story of Kaylee Ann Sawyer. Now, she was born in Bend, Oregon, to parents Jamie and Julie Sawyer.
I know a lot of people in Bend now. I feel like I am an honorary member there, a resident, if you will, from my previous job at Dutchie.
Did you see my face? I was like...
Mm-hmm. Half of them live there. That used to be the headquarters.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to go just around the river bend to Oregon. At the time of the story, Kaylee is 23 years old, living in Bend, Oregon. And she was just one of those people that the true crime trope, like she lit up a room when she walked in. She was so beautiful. She was so kind. Like everyone truly did love her. She was super smart, friendly. Just was like described as someone who really just loved life. Now, Kaylee was a lot like me. She changed her mind on what she wanted to do when she grew up like 800 times. But at the time of this story, circa 2016, she was working at a dental office as a dental assistant and had decided that she actually wanted to go back to school to be a dentist. So she was working and she was going to Central Oregon Community College.
I could never be a dentist, but I will tell you one thing. I love getting my teeth cleaned so much, and I love my dental hygienist, and you used to go to her, too. I used to ask for her, but now, like, they just give me her, and I was telling Chris, like, oh, I got caught up on her life and blah, 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 and he's like, how close are you? And I'm like, her kids are graduating, and I've been with her since one was like in elementary school.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing, you know, like we're friends without being friends.
Right. I've always said that about my gynecologist. Like, I feel like I'm losing out on a relationship with my gynecologist because I'm not getting pregnant. And I feel like people who are pregnant get so close with their gynecologist because they're going like every fucking week at some point, you know? And I'm like,
yeah,
damn, my gynecologist couldn't pick me out of a fucking lineup, you know?
I think mine could, mostly because I said...
Yours could.
Well, mostly because I was like, fuck this, when she put the IUD in me. And she was like, let it go. Just keep going. You just keep going. I was like, I am.
I warned you. But also, everybody fucking remembers you. Well, in July of 2016... Kaylee had gone out to a bachelorette party with some of her friends, and the bachelorette party ended, and then some of them, like, went out to a bar. While she was at the bar, somebody, like, texted Kaylee's boyfriend and was like, somebody come get her, she dancing like a stripper. Okay, no, but they really did say, like, you need to come get your girl, she's dancing with another guy. And it was,
oh,
like,
my gosh.
Not even that serious. But her boyfriend, Cameron, or Cam, did come pick her up from the bar, and on their way home, and when they got home, you know, tempers were flying, they were arguing a little bit, and she was like, you know what, I need a minute to cool off, I'm fucking going for a walk. He gets out of the vehicle, goes inside, and she gets out and goes for a walk, like, still in, like, a black dress and heels, like, goes out for a walk, which we do find out later was kind of her MO her whole life. Even as a kid, her mom said if she got in trouble or anything like that, like she would have to just walk away, like go walk and blow off steam. Like even as a kid, she would just need to take a walk. So after Kaylee goes on her walk to blow off some steam, Cam texts her and is like, like, where are you? Are you okay? And she answers back, but is like very short with him. And then one article I saw on News Center Maine said that her last text to him was goodbye. But that's the only time I saw that that was the last text. And this was on a Dateline episode, and they didn't say that. So I feel like that would be something that they would have highlighted. But the apartment that Kaylee and Cam lived in together was right by the school where she went, at Central Oregon Community College. Now, Cam keeps trying to call her, and she doesn't answer, and so he starts to panic. He's calling her family the next day, being like, has anybody seen her? He's calling her mom over and over again, messaging her mom, but her mom was like driving somewhere with no signal, and when she got into where she had signal, her phone was like, ba-ding, ding, 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 you know, so you know, oh, her mom's like stomach was just dropping, being like,
yeah,
all these texts of being like, have you seen Kaylee? Where's Kaylee? You know, all of this. But the boyfriend literally called everybody to figure out if anybody had seen her. And they're like, no, what are you talking about? So Cam and Kaylee's mom both report her missing. And the police, like, everybody gets involved very quickly to start, like, putting out missing poster flyers, all the things, like, that Sunday, because she went missing, like, late in the night, Saturday night into Sunday morning. And by Sunday, they're already putting out missing posters and the police are involved. While all this is happening in Bend with everyone searching for Kaylee, just up the road, about 20 miles, as the week turns into the work week in Redmond, Oregon, police get some information. So they have this police officer recruit named Isabel Ponce. Now, Isabel comes into the police station and she like takes forever. Like, it was like, this part was on the Dateline episode, and it was like this whole thing. She like waited for this detective to eat his lunch, was like, went in his office. Like, it was just kind of like a dragged out thing, but she's crying and they're like, what's going on? And she says that her husband, who is a security guard at the Central Oregon Community College, that he had been acting really weird that Sunday. And she was like, something's up with him. Like, I can't figure out what's going on. And they had like gone to the movies together. And she's like, no, something's like really up with him. And he just was distant. And then the next day, on that Monday, he comes to her and he's like really upset and says that he had run over a girl at work.
What?
And this part wasn't very clear to me, but it seems like that the wife, the police recruit, Isabel, is the one that kind of put together that it must be this missing girl that she had seen on TV.
Well, it doesn't take a police recruit to put two and two together.
Right. So the police that she's talking to are like, okay, well, like, what car did he hit her in? His security patrol car or like his car? And that he had hit her in the security patrol car. So we find out that her husband is Edwin Lara. He was actually training to be a police officer, had a degree in criminal justice, and was working at the community college as a security guard while he was like in training to be a police officer.
So he knows damn well that you should report that ASAP.
Exactly. And so they're like, okay, so he told you this, and then what happened? And she's like, well, he was just like pacing, and then he took my gun out of my purse and was just like, I need to go, I need to go, and he left. And they're like, okay, this whole thing is weird. Like, so you're a police officer, and basically your husband has a gun that he took from you, and he's on the run from a hit and run? And you're just like coming in here waiting, telling us the story. Like, she's clearly upset. Like, she's, you know, she's telling them, but it was like, how long did this take you to come and you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think by the time that she came in and told them, essentially he had like an 8-hour head start. So they ask her like, okay, well, where do you think he could be going? And she was like, I don't know. He could be going to like his grandfather's house in Los Angeles. And so they put out a be on the lookout for his silver Nissan Altima and him, obviously. That police is talking to the Bend police, and Bend police is getting all this information, but this isn't obviously anything that they can really share with the family, but they're like really starting to panic, like something really bad may have happened to Kaylee. And they're doing everything they can to rally everyone together to start searching for Kaylee, because they, you know, they've got like tons of people helping them look around the area for her. But now the police are on the hunt for Edwin Inco Lara. So the police end up figuring out, because like one of the detectives knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, that I think was just like kind of pure luck, that they figured out that Edwin's family actually lived pretty close to the freaking police department. And so they were like, wait, let's just go over there and see if he went there. And it's like, wait, why didn't the wife tell? Why is the wife sending us all the way to fucking LA to a grandparent's house when he's got fucking family that lives right here?
Yeah.
So the police get there and they find his Nissan Altima. And so they, of course, like bring in all the, you know, all the SWAT, all the things, and he's not there. And so they ask the parents, like, where'd he go? And of course, they're not very helpful. But basically, they were like, yeah, he asked for some money and he left. And they're like, okay, any idea where he went? And they're like, mm-mm, don't know a thing. So detectives get a search warrant for his house, for Edwin's house. They find that Edwin's got a lot of like religious stuff. Like, he, not, that sounded weird, but like a Bible, like he's got a Bible. He's got a lot of religious things. But,
oh, wow.
No, I know that is not what I meant. But like, he was very, like you could tell he read it. He like marked passages. He like wrote in it. They found evidence like that he like tithed to his church all the time. They also found YouTube videos of him singing songs and stuff about like him being part of the worship team at his church. And one of the detectives was also a pastor. And so I think that that was something that he was going to be able to, if they found Edwin, be able to use, because he's a pastor, Edwin's, you know, clearly into his church and all. And so I think it was like, this is something that's important to him. So put that into your pocket for later kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now they go into his shed and they find, I feel like this was a bit theatrical, this part, but they find a like poster about serial killers, but he was a criminal justice major. And it was like an assignment, I think. So it just made it seem like he was like really into serial killers and like killing and all this stuff. And I was like, or was it just an assignment? And like,
right.
We're also, I hate to say it like that, but we're also into serial killers. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, is it, I don't know. You could say that about every single person that likes a true crime podcast. So I was like, is this just for the theatrics of it? Or was it really something sinister that they could tell was sinister? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, I feel like if he was obsessed with serial killers, it would have been way more evident than just a poster that he made for it. But yeah, I mean, hell, I've gotten lots of stuff, like lots of books that I'm looking at right now about ghosts, one true crime thing. You have several true crime thing. You know what I mean? Like,
I was just thinking that. I was like, I think I have 3 serial killer books over there on the shelf, like right now, you know?
Yeah.
But they also found something that was very important. It was a trash bag that had a green purse, and that green purse had blood on it. And inside said green purse was Kaylee Sawyer's passport.
What?
So, like, got him. And then they also found her shoes, the shoes that she was last seen wearing.
Oh, my God.
And then they found a rock. Then this rock was very sharp, and it had a lot of dried blood. Like, you could tell it was very saturated in blood, and then that blood dried. And so they were like, this is a murder weapon. Like, this is absolutely a murder weapon.
I feel like he hit her, freaked out, and was like, well, now you have to die.
Maybe. So now we're going to Salem, Oregon.
Now is when you could have said just around the river bend.
True. But it's a little bit further. Just around the river bend would have been the other place that I talked about earlier that was where the police were. But I'd already made the joke, so I was like, oh, I can't do it twice. Then I'd be like, Donna, did I mention she has a boyfriend?
Nothing wrong with that.
Okay, so Andrea Mays had just finished a double shift. She worked at Ross Dress for Less, so you know she was looking very cute.
Oh, hell yeah.
And she had just gotten off of a double shift. She was supposed to get off way earlier in the day, but she covered for someone. So she was getting off work pretty late at like 9 p.m.
Oh, and she was a great person who was covering for someone, like took a double shift to cover for that person.
So she gets in her car and she pulls out her phone because she's just got, of course, to take her end of the day selfie for Snapchat and got to keep those streaks going. She pulls out her phone. She goes to take her selfie and she sees out of the corner of her eye, someone reach into her window.
No.
And as they reach into the window, they unlock the car door and like got in really quickly. The guy that got in had a backpack with him and a gun between himself and the backpack. Like the backpack was on his front.
Oh my God.
And Andrea's like, This is a prank, right? Like, this is a joke. This has got to be a joke. And so the guy's like, you need to drive, like starts yelling at her. And she literally starts laughing at him. Like, she truly thought this was somebody pranking her. And spoiler alert, it's Edwin. And he is like, do you think this is a fucking joke? Like, I will shoot you. Let's fucking go.
Well, you are wearing the backpack on your front, like you're carrying a baby.
I think he was just holding it. I don't know that he was necessarily wearing it like
that. Oh.
I think he just was. Oh. I mean, like, has he? Can you picture him trying to get in a car really fast with a turtle backpack happening?
Thinking. Oh, my God. I would have laughed, too. I would have been like, wait, what?
So Edwin tells Andrea, like, look, I killed a girl back in Bend, and I'll fucking do it again. So drive. And while she's driving, he makes her look up the stories about Kaylee to prove that he killed someone.
Oh my God.
And so she actually does a really great job of like keeping her cool, just driving, trying to think of ways to get out of it. And she's like, bitch, I got an oil leak. Like, this is not the car to be, I just picked up a double shift. Like, I'm trying to cover my bills. It's 2016. Like, the economy's not great. I got an oil leak. This car's not going to make it very far. And he's like, it's fine. We'll just keep adding oil, drive. And she's like, okay. So she starts driving. But she's like, you really should get a different car. Like, this is not going to make it. So after a little bit, they stop at a gas station and a McDonald's so he can eat. And they just have all the...
He didn't buy her food.
I'm sure she didn't want food.
I mean, a McDouble always and little chicken nugs.
So you know that she had all these interactions with people, though. And nobody knew that she's literally being held at gunpoint.
Right. That really is so fucking scary because everything in you is telling you, tell someone.
Right.
Get help. But then the other part is like, he could just kill them and me.
Yeah. And that's what he said to her too, was like, don't do anything because I will kill them and you. So she didn't. Well, after about 90 miles, he says, okay, we're stopping. And they stopped at a motel. And so they get a room and he handcuffs her to the bed and he takes a shower. And then when he comes out of the shower, he's like, okay, now your turn to shower. And she's like, fuck that. I would rather die than shower in front of you. Like, basically, like, you can do whatever you want to me, but I'm not showering in front of you. Like, that is so demeaning and all of that. And she's like, I'm not showering. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And, you know, she's trying to think of ways to get out to, I mean, can you attack him? Can you whatever? But she's also like, what if I fail? And, you know, he's stronger than her, all the things. So he handcuffs her to the bed and forces her to take a sleeping pill. And then he lays down beside her and, like, licks her face.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. And so she's like, she knew, though, that he was about to rape her. And she said, basically, just dumb luck, an alarm goes off on her phone. And, of course, you know, that probably scared the life out of everybody, this damn alarm going off on a phone. But the alarm goes off on her phone, and he's like, what is that? What does that mean? And she's like, it's just my timer. And she just gets this idea to be like, I have to take medicine every day. It's my timer to remind me to take medicine. And he's like, what do you have to take medicine for? And she's like, I have an STD. So I have to take medicine every day for this STD. And he buys it. And so he doesn't rape her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. After, like, the genius of that. I'm sorry. I just have to go back
to
that.
Yeah, that's such a quick, like, yes. Wow.
But also, she was like, I don't even know what this alarm was for. Like, why it was even set. But it was set, divine intervention, whatever you want to call it. And it went off. And it literally probably saved her life. But at the very least, saved her from being raped.
Yeah.
So then he gets a phone call. And it's from someone in his family that's like, dude, the cops are on to you. Like, what's going on? And so he jumps up, puts on a bulletproof vest. Where the fuck did he get that? Unsure. And they leave. Well, Andrea's car is putting its way down the road, needing some fucking oil because it's got the leak. While she played it up, she wasn't lying. It really had an oil leak. Like, it ain't going to make it. So Edwin decides, okay, we got to get another car.
Which she's been telling you.
Right. They pull off the road to this, like, random Super 8 motel where they see a man that's unloading his car about to check into a room. Edwin grabs Andrea and pulls her with him while this guy's, like, unloading his car, walking into his room and, like, busts into the room with the guy. And the guy's like, whoa, 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 you got the wrong room. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, no, I don't. Bitch, give me your car. And the guy's like, no. And Edwin fucking shoots him in the stomach.
Oh, my God.
And so after he shoots him in the stomach, Edwin drags Laura. They run, like, across the street to this gas station where someone's filling up their car. And it's an older woman with two younger men. And he jumps in, makes Andrea jump in, and is like, drive. And they're like, oh, my God, like, what the hell do we do? The woman is, like, freaking out. And Andrea's, like, trying to get her to calm down because, like, you're making this horrible situation worse. Like, you need to be calm, you know? And they drive off. And Edwin makes Andrea throw all of their cell phones out of the window. So she, like, tries to throw them out super hard so that they land on the grass. That, like, instead of the road, so people, if they notice, you know, obviously somebody's been shot, like, this has created a commotion. People probably don't even know she's missing yet, you know? I mean, they may at this point because it's been well over 8 hours, but from before, nobody even knew she was missing. She still had her fucking cell phone. So she kind of tosses their phones out so that maybe somebody could ping them or whatever to find them. But while all this is happening, though, someone did call 911. And the guy that he shot in the hotel did survive.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so after they're driving in this car with these people for about 30 miles, he just stops and is like, okay, everybody get out. Like, bye, go. And as they're all getting out, Andrea sees that one of them still had their phone. Like, they had never given it to her to throw out. And I guess in the commotion, her and Edwin didn't even notice.
Yeah.
So as soon as they were kicked out of the car, that kid called 911.
Hell yeah.
And I say kid, I have actually no idea how old he was. Everything just says like a younger man. So I'm picturing like 20. It's like Edwin knows the end of this is coming. And so he's like zooming in and out, driving super, super fast. And all of a sudden, like, is like, do you hear that helicopter? There's a helicopter above us. Like, we're being followed, yada, yada, yada. Well, long story short, he was right, and they were following him because then they hear the sirens, and he ends up, like...
Wait, who was he telling about the helicopter to?
Andrea. Andrea was still in the car with him, and he was telling...
Oh, so everyone else got out,
but he made Andrea stay with him.
Okay,
so sorry, that wasn't clear. So he's making... He thinks he's got his ride or die with him, I guess, because he's got Andrea... That he ain't letting her go. So he's like, do you hear them? And then they really actually end up hearing police sirens. So I don't know if he was like trying to make his last hurrah. Like, I don't know what he was doing. But basically, he made her make a Facebook post of like recording him and her in this like chase with the police and wanted her to post it on Facebook and was like, no, let me see that you posted on Facebook. And she's like, this is a very vulnerable moment where she's like visibly upset. Like she does not want this on her Facebook. Like she's like, I don't want to post this. And he's like, you're going to fucking post it or I'll kill you. And so she quickly, this girl, so smart, quickly thinks to change where it shares from sharing with everyone to sharing to only me and post it. And he thinks that she's posted it now, like almost like it's his last dying testament, you know, but she only posted it to hers, not to everybody else's. And then Edwin calls 911 and is like, hey, I'm the guy that y'all are trying to get. You know, I have this girl with me, Andrea. Like, there's a lot of back and forth. He puts Andrea on the phone. And then, long story short, he does end up pulling over and the police arrest him. But the police don't know who Andrea is because he's nowhere near Bend and Salem and all of that. So they don't know who Andrea is. They think she's an accomplice. So she actually gets arrested too until they figure out that, no, she's a fucking victim.
Right.
He gets arrested and very first thing, they're like, where is Kaylee's body? Because they can't find Kaylee. And he starts drawing a map and he shows them where he dumped her body. And the mailbox where he dumped her was 18700. And the homicide code is 187 in California. And so it was like, that was very planned of him, that like he chose that. Basically, it seems like maybe he had had this plan all along, maybe not necessarily for Kaylee specifically, but he had a plan to murder someone and dump them here and then basically just chose Kaylee out of convenience.
It's so weird. Like, what made him snap, and for a lack of a better word, you know?
Right. Well,
or had there really been signs? Because I feel like that is a big leap, you know?
Right. Well, and when they found her body, it was like unrecognizable. Like her family says that the last time that they got to kiss her on the forehead was through a black body bag because they were like, you can't look like you can't. She's unrecognizable. Oh, and everything kind of like alluded to it, but then nothing ever really said like truly why she was unrecognizable. But I think that he truly beat her that bad with that rock that.
Oh, my.
Yes.
God.
Now, again, it had been a couple of days that she had been out in the elements, so some of it could have been that. But like I said about the whole church thing before, the pastor slash detective really did use that to his advantage when he was interrogating him to be like, you need to tell us the truth. Because he did try to at first to be like, yeah, I hit her, you know, and they're like, no, you didn't. What happened? And he said that basically he got this urge. He had urges to kill beautiful women and he couldn't stop himself, and that he saw her walking, offered her a ride. She refused it. And basically the next thing knew she was in his car. And because his car was, even though he was a security guard, was set up like a police car. So, you know, you can't get out from the back. It had the partition. Once she was in, she couldn't get out. And then took her cell phone and it was like, she was done. Like there was no way for her to get out.
Yeah.
And he took her to a secluded area and raped and killed her. Now, he was very into like, so when can I talk to the media kind of thing?
Oh, God, of course.
Yes. And this whole thing was a little bit of a circus as far as the case, because they were wanting to go for the death penalty. But now they had all this footage of him where they had read him his Miranda rights. They'd even read him his consular rights, which basically like he was a legal U.S. resident, but he was born in Honduras. And so they were like, do you need to speak to someone from the consulate and all that? So like they
given us a bad name.
If you don't know, Donna's dad is from Honduras. So they basically did everything. But there was this one part in it where he had said something about, honestly, I had a hard time hearing it, but he said something about about an attorney. And they were like, yeah, you can whatever you want, but he never asked for it. So in court, they threw out his confession. So the police were like, fuck, okay, well, we've got to kind of start from scratch, but not really, because they did have the evidence from his house, the trash bag with the purse, with her shoes, with her passport, with the blood on the rock. She had evidence under her fingernails and stuff. So they did have evidence, but they didn't have his confession. And so given that it was a death penalty case, they were like, it's probably going to be easier actually if we just try to make a plea with him. And so the family was like, okay, we know how the appeals go for with the death penalty cases. He was given life in prison without the possibility of parole. And then from there, he had Andrea's case as well because of the freaking, you know, kidnapping of Andrea. And so he received a life in prison sentence as well for that case. And then there was like a bunch of other charges with California from his like chase and all of that. So he's spending life in prison. And there's been a lot of reform as far as Kaylee's law. And so basically it said that like security on campuses have to be security. Like they can't look like police officers if they aren't truly police officers. So like their cars cannot be equipped like a police officer's car, like how she couldn't get out. He shouldn't have been able to have that. And then they can't have like the red and blue lights like a police car if it's not truly a police car. Like the university we went to, University of Southern Mississippi, their campus police, it is a police department. They can arrest you just like the city police can. They can do anything that they are actual police. So it doesn't apply to them. This applies to strictly security guards. And so.
Yeah. LSU has the same thing where it's actually police officers. Yeah.
Well, so now they have to be identified as, you know, security officers, and that they have to have camera footage in their cars too, like how a taxi would or something, you know, or even a police.
Yeah, like a dash
cam. Yeah, but even a police car too, though, but they have to have footage now. So her family actually sued the school because they said that there were serious red flags from Edwin Lara. So this was from KGW, this quote, but it said members of the COCC's campus public safety department knew of his fascination with dead bodies, that he showed numerous people at work nude photographs and pornographic videos he filmed of himself and a woman he was having an affair with, his mannerisms so alarming that one female cadet refused to ride in the same car as him, and lying about once being a police officer in Honduras, where he saw bodies, quote, all chopped up. They had the opportunity to discover that Lara once plotted a murder and struggled with an urge to kill most of his life. The tragedy will forever resonate in the heart of our community. So they...
Holy
fuck. So they won a $2 million lawsuit against the school. And they're like, obviously, no amount of money is ever going to bring her back. Right. But... I mean, they needed to be held responsible too because
there were some due diligence. There were some
clear red flags. And so like now I think in that law they have to have like national, and maybe I may be making this up, international, but for sure national background checks. Stuff that you should already have working on a school campus.
Mm-hmm. Given authority too. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is just so fucking sad. Yeah.
And like there were just so many lives impacted because I mean, he went on a spree.
A spree.
Yeah. But I'm just like, I wonder, and they touched on this in the Dateline episode too, like, he went straight to murder. Like, were there other, like, was there something else? Or did he really just jump straight into murder and he was the makings of a serial killer? Or, I don't know. But most people don't jump straight to murder. It happens, but there's usually other things.
And it could have been straight to murder, and that's why he was so, like, freaked and he didn't know what to
and
do.
Ran. And
I don't know. Ugh.
But I do want to say his wife didn't have any charges against her, but she like moved, resigned from her position and all the things.
Yeah, wow. We hate Edwin.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. Also, I kept thinking Elwin every time I read Elwin.
Ha! I know.
I said Elwin twice every time I read. And then he was from Honduras.
Literally was thinking, that is way too close to comfort. Like, he's really doing us dirty.
But I also was thinking, people know the word or the name Edwin, but they can't get Elwin. It's the same.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you, it's the E-L that throws them off. They're going to be like, oh, shit, I don't know. And I'm like, it's literally the win, because I'm going to win no matter what.
Fucking Leo.
Thank you so much for that recommendation, though, because I had never heard of that. Ugh. And it was recent.
Well, before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about Miracle Maid. Because let me just tell you, I'm so pissed at myself right now because it was laundry day and I slept on non-Miracle Maid sheets. I was like, God, I was so freaking hot last night. Why was I so hot? And then I was like, duh, I didn't have my Miracle Maid sheets on last night.
Look, we've said it before, we'll say it again. Miracle Maid sheets are not a want, they're a need.
Like, at this point, if you come over to one of our houses, you're probably going to be tucked into Miracle Maid sheets at night because we're obsessed.
We've been using the sheets for years, and like Carrie said, we are obsessed. The softness is unmatched. The temperature regulation is a game changer, and if it can help Carrie with her perimenopause or however you say it, it's a miracle, definitely.
Well, and you know Birdie's over there, like... Look, Sada and Donna, if she puts any other sheets, like, this ain't comfortable. And then when she does have Miracle Maid, she's like, this bed's mine now. Sorry.
Exactly.
And I mean, who can blame them? These sheets are made with silver-infused fabric inspired by NASA, which helps us regulate our temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper dealing with the summer heat waves, these sheets are for you.
But also clean. C-L-E-A-N. Because the silver helps prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. That means less laundry, fewer funky odors, and no more worrying about what's living on your pillowcase.
It really is wild to think that traditional sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. And I'm not trying to sleep in a science experiment. I'm already hot. I'm my own petri dish. No thank you.
Right, not today, germs. Plus, Miracle Maid sheets are so luxurious, they feel like they belong in a five-star hotel, but without that five-star price tag.
So whether you're shopping for yourself or looking to spoil someone else, this is upgrade your bed and skin deserves. Head on over to trymiracle.com/creep so you can save over 40%. Plus, if you use our code creep at checkout, you'll get a free three-piece towel set and an extra 20% off.
And if you're not 100% in love with them, Miracle Maid offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, but trust us, you're going to fall in love, like Donna, with her boyfriend.
Okay, so head on over to trymiracle.com/creep and use the promo code creep to save big and treat yourself to a luxury-level sleep that Donna's boyfriend, Chris, loves.
Thank you, Miracle Maid, for sponsoring this episode and for helping us stay cool, clean, and cozy every night, even if the pets think it's all for them. All right, we are going across the pond to Australia. So picture it, Victoria, Australia, mid-1800s. Gold rushes were all the thing because people were like, hey, you got any gold? Because they did, and they were striking it rich. Basically, in Victoria, Australia, they were turning patches of land that were so dusty and crusty like my elbows into boom towns, and Ariat was no exception. That was the town.
I feel like that there are two things that every kid learned in school.
AU, got any
and
gold?
And that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are the two things. You know from you know from the periodic table that AU is gold because of AU, got any gold?
Now, like my other stories before, we know that boom towns are, you know, glitz, glam. Well, I say glitz and glam, but it's a fast-paced, you know, city that's built overnight, basically. And with boom towns, we know that comes with growing pains because they are popping up overnight and then being overpopulated. And what we're going to be talking about is the difficulties when it came to caring for those with mental illnesses. At this time, people with mental illnesses or intellectual disabilities were often housed in regular prisons, like crammed behind bars next to violent criminals with no understanding of their conditions or, worse, no treatment, you know, no anything for these people. But the government of Victoria realized that something had to be done. And it really wasn't like out of compassion. They weren't like, hey, you know what? They have rights and they need to be treated as humans. It was more about relieving the prison system, which was struggling because of the overpopulation. So in 1860, construction began on what would become the Ariot Lunatic Asylum, later renamed Airedale Lunatic Asylum, which is what I'm going to call it. It was very ambitious. It had sprawling hills. The complex was huge. And like many asylums we've talked about, it was self-sufficient. Now, in 1865, the first inmates, because that's what they were referred to as, were transferred into the facility. And, you know, at first it was people who were criminally insane. But before long, it became a catch-all destination. And we know that in the past, men who were tired of their wives could be like, she's crazy, and sign her into a mental asylum. The thing with Airedale, you had to have 2 signatures to get you in, but 8 to get you out.
What?
Yeah, so 2 people, 2 signatures, so it really could be a fucking stranger or, you know, the mistress that your husband's with to sign you in, but 8 signatures to get you out. So, you know, most people didn't get out. But seriously, like, you know, postpartum depression, Airedale, epilepsy, Airedale, autism, you know, poverty, being a little too eccentric to Leo would get you in Airedale.
I was literally talking about this today with someone.
Okay, so I was thinking about this because I hate to pick on men, but it really was mostly men who would do this to their wives or, you know, whatever. But it's because they had the power to do that. Women would have to poison their husbands and try to get away with it because they didn't have the power to sign them in.
Right. I think that women were doing some of the same things that men were. It just looked so different. And honestly, there's probably no telling how many of women who got away with it because they didn't know that it was poison, you know?
Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not saying women did not send their kids or whoever, you know, to these asylums. They did. I'm just saying, like, it was a catch-all. It wasn't just people who were suffering from mental illness. It was literally whoever could have 2 freaking signatures and be done with you.
Because I know for sure Donna and Tiffany would sign to have put me in a couple of times.
Where's the dotted line?
Because pre-medicated carry was pretty fucking rough. But back then, those medications didn't exist.
And we know that once you've had your permanent residence become an asylum, especially back then, you were kind of like shipped off. You were out of sight and mostly out of hope. Because again, 8 signatures, you're not getting out of there easily. And at the time, the approach to mental health was more trial and error and terror.
And lobotomies.
Than anything. Yes. Also, the people that they had were, quote, insane, quote, feeble-minded, or, quote, morally deficient. Every time I think about things, I'm like, God, they were just so mean back then. Anyway, so Airedale was one of 3 sister asylums, and it was designed to hold the most dangerous and long-term patients. And the idea was to remove those individuals from society. And that's what they did. They kind of tucked them away behind the gates and the walls, and people were like, oh, I mean, it looks like a nice place.
Also, I just thought of this, and I'm going to let you finish your story, but you know how you said, like, people were so mean back then with the words and the terminology that they used? But here's the thing, is that you know that there were people that were like, there's nothing wrong with calling them whatever words. And it's just like now when we try to use different terminology, like sex worker, unhoused, undocumented, stuff like that. And people get so angry when you use those words because they're like, it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yes, it does. And it matters now the same way that it mattered back then when they put those terms on people too.
So freaking true. I like that little mini soapbox.
You know, I don't like to do exercises, but I do not mind climbing up on a box that's made for soap.
You like climbing up on other things too.
Not boxes. Sticks.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. Pogo sticks. Lady Gaga.
Oh, Lord.
Disco sticks. What does she call them? Disco sticks, not pogo sticks.
Yeah.
I'm the worst.
Good. Okay. You're like the little leprechaun on his pogo stick. But okay. So back to this. Don't get me off on sex. All right. Well, I do want to get off on sex. Anyway. Okay. Bye. How I said people were like, oh, it looks like a nice little place. Inside, it was like Happy Gilmore's grandmother was being subjected to all the things. You know what I mean? And patients were subjected to treatments like electroconvulsive therapy, lobotomies, like Carrie said, chemical restraints, straitjackets, you know, all the things. But from the outside, it really did look like, oh, these people are thriving in their new location because it had over 1,000 patients, 500 staff members, and it had its own piggery. And like I said, it was a self-sufficient city. Like, no matter what was going on, it could have been the apocalypse anywhere else, and Airedale was going to thrive, okay? But they had their piggery, gardens, orchards, vineyards.
Dang.
Like, all the things. It had a total of 63 buildings, and it, I keep wanting to say billions, and so buildings came out real weird.
Did you see me smiling because I thought it was funny?
Yes. I don't know who I am, like Dr. Evil, billions. No, buildings. It's so hard for me to say. But it had like courtyards and something else that threw people off. It had something called a ha-ha wall.
Oh, no.
But it was no laughing matter.
Okay, Donna.
Now, these were architectural traps, walls that looked low and non-threatening from the outside. So they're like, they're really not even like, if they wanted to get out, they definitely could. They could just hop over those walls. But on the inside, they were paired with deep trenches to prevent escape. So it gave the illusion of freedom while enforcing the captivity inside. So how I can describe it is it looked like a pony wall from the outside, but inside it was like 10-foot tall walls. Yeah. It was like they were like more underground than what they could see ground level. And they're like, it just looks so nice. Now, in December 1886, Airedale expanded with the addition of J Ward, which was a former jail. Now, this was more like high security for the most dangerous, criminally insane patients. So normally these people would be in prisons and all the things, but with their mental health diagnosis, they were in J Ward. A lot of Australia's most infamous criminals were housed in J Ward. One was Bill Wallace. He was the oldest inmate ever at J Ward. He got in trouble because he was in a cafe and a man lit up a cigarette, which Bill did not like. So Bill asked him to stop, but the man didn't. You know, he's like, no, I'm going to puff these in peace. Well, Bill waited outside the cafe. And when that man walked out, he shot him. There were no witnesses, but the cop heard a shot. And so he came to the scene. Bill refused to talk, but they did charge him with murder. And he was 43 years old at the time. And apparently, because it was all kind of circumstantial, his sentence was like at the mercy of the governor. So whenever the governor thought he would do no more harm, he could be released. He would be released. Like he wasn't like serving a life sentence. He was serving like a conditional sentence.
Yeah, because it wasn't, he probably didn't really do it. Because you mean they just happened to walk by and heard the thing? No, I don't know. Maybe he really did do it, but that seems sketchy as fuck to me.
But he reminds me of the old man and Jake the Crow or whatever from Shawshank Redemption. I couldn't think of his name. And he sketches it in and I can't even think about it. He got to a point where he didn't want to leave. You know, people had petitioned for his release too. And so they're like, hey, you can leave. And he's like, I don't want to. Like, you can't make me. And he ended up having his 100th birthday.
Cool.
Like, he turned 100 in jail. They gave him a chess set because that's what he loved to play. And he passed away when he was 107 years old in 1989. And now his chess set that they had given him on his 100th birthday, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but anyway, it's on display in the museum. But here's what I'm talking about. He was known to be one of the heaviest smokers ever at that asylum.
Wait, the one who didn't want the guy to smoke was the heaviest smoker?
Yeah, so it's like, wait, did he just like pick that from that guy to be like, stop doing it? And he didn't do it, so he's like, fuck you. Or are you right where it really wasn't him? Because why would he care if he was smoking? Because he was a smoker.
Yeah, that's really weird.
So that was a little something about old Bill. And now another person is Gary David Webb. Now, he grew up in a lot of orphanages and institutions due to his parents being very unfit and abusive. He started stealing when he was only 11 years old, and he was 13 when he was diagnosed with a personality disorder with psychopathic tendencies. So how he made it to Airedale was a robbery gone wrong, and it ended in attempted murder. Now, this was a pizza parlor in 1982, and there was kind of like a shootout with the police. And the owner and one of the police were severely injured, but they ended up surviving. That's why it was attempted murder. But it was not him being imprisoned that made him notorious. It was the things he did while he was imprisoned and institutionalized. He was really into self-harm, and he would threaten everyone, but like really harm himself. So he would swallow razors. He mutilated parts of his ears and his nipples. He hammered nails into his feet.
Oh.
And he did some mutilation with his Oscar Mayer wiener.
Mm.
So he cut it off twice, I believe. And the third time, they couldn't get it back on.
What?
Yeah. So I don't know if he like completely cut it off, but they said cut it off. And that's what I take it as, but I don't know. So again, those made him notorious because everyone heard about all of that. He also wrote a manuscript about massacres that he would do if he was released. I mean, he was basically like saying, don't let me out or you're going to regret it because I'm going to kill everyone. No one's safe. Now, there is an act called the Mental Health Act, and it made it where he could appeal, which he did, and he won.
What?
Yes. But in like a little alley-oop, like what's it called when they, a Hail Mary, that I had to think about some sports there. The government came together and they were like, no, we cannot let him out. Like, look at all these things that he's written and all the threats he's done and all of these things. And they passed another act, and it was called the Community Protection Act. And it was all to keep him in prison.
Wow.
Which it did. And David died by suicide in 1993 at the age of 38. But total years spent in an institution in his life was 33 years. And he was only 38.
What?
Yeah. So like from being in orphanages and like in and out of mental health asylums at the time, you know, like all
that's
of that.
That's heartbreaking. Ugh,
it just is so sad. Yeah. Now, here's where things get a little spooky. Over 13,000 people are believed to have died on the grounds of the Iredell Lunatic Asylum. So we know a lot of them are under grim circumstances. So, you know, we're thinking that their energy, at least, never left. Now, Iredell officially closed in 1998 after more than 130 years of operation. So a long fucking time. But in the 130 years, over 13,000 people died.
Gosh.
So it is thought to be one of Australia's most haunted locations and definitely the most haunted asylum in Australia. Now, there's tour guides that regularly capture EVPs, which are electronic voice phenomena. And if you're new to all of this and you're like, still, what is that? It's where, you know, they have the little, like, is anyone here? Give a moment to, like, have silence. Like, what's your name? Silence. And then when they play it back, they can hear something that wasn't heard by their, like, ear. Now, guests have heard things like, help me, get out, or something that just, oh, gives me chilly bumps. I see you. And then they've also caught an EVP that sounded like a voice was humming a lullaby, which again is just creepy.
Yeah.
Like a lullaby in itself, oh, soothing. A lullaby from unseen person and then like an old one. No. So one of the ghosts is thought to be George Fidemont, who was the last governor of the jail. Now, something about George is he loved Jay Ward. He loved the asylum. He loved everything. And in 1886, he was giving a tour of the facility, like fucking just proud as punch. And when he was like boasting about it, he was descending the stairs and he had a massive heart attack and died on the spot. So, you know, he died where he loved, but do we keep going on
right?
the tour or
like,
not?
I paid for this. So, I mean,
yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. But tour guides now, they have reported hearing like the clomp of those boots that he would wear. They called it hobnailed boots. Never heard of that. But I was like, sounds ominous. But they've heard them going up and down that same staircase, which is where he took his last breath. Now, let's make our way down to the women's wing, where people feel like they're being watched, where they hear soft crying or like someone like talking like a mutter, like a whisper, but, you know, like kind of muttering underneath their breath, but no one else is around. They've also heard rustle of skirts in the hallway, but no one's there. And one room in particular is supposed to make guests physically ill in the women's wing. There have even been paranormal investigators who have left the wing with unexplained scratches, dizziness, or they've blacked out.
Damn.
And this is where nurse Carrie with a Y is seen. And she's a nurse, obviously. But she's like silently gliding through the hallways in a crisp uniform, but no expression on her face unless it's like a cold stare. Or some people don't even see her face at all. And maybe she just has resting bitch face like Carrie with an eye does. Don't know.
It's a problem.
And then there was a men's wing, and they have repeated sightings of a tall, shadowy man with no face who walks along the corridors, but he's like always just out of reach. Some people have dubbed him the warden because they think he possibly could have been the warden or one of the guards just because of how he's like always in the halls, like walking up and down, like security.
Yeah.
Now, the ECT room, you know, where the electroconvulsive therapy was administered, it's really active, which, hello, guests have heard the buzz of the old medical equipment, even though it's disconnected, and that gives me chilly bumps too, just thinking about that. And other people say that the temperature suddenly drops and they have the sensation of cold metal touching their temples. And then all the electrical equipment malfunctions in the room, and where like the batteries die, lights start fluttering, cameras stop recording, all the things. And then there's J Ward, which we know the energy is going to be heavy in here. These were like the quote worst of the worst. Tour guides say that people faint during the visits, particularly around the solitary cells or the gallows. Women get lots of unwanted and unwelcomed attention in J Ward. And I just want to be like, they might have met their match with me, because what's unwanted? I'd be like, do it. Do it. Touch me. Do whatever.
You have a boyfriend.
I know, but it's going to be like, is somebody going to match my freak? Is somebody going to match my nasty? These ghosts will be like, God dang, you take the fun out of everything. Because I'd be like, do it harder.
Poor Chris.
Okay. I know. Also, in J Ward, the bathroom is very foreboding, because apparently an inmate was murdered and dismembered there. God. There are heavy steel doors that slam shut, even though it's been wedged open. Visitors have left with claw marks on their skin. They've had like sudden sadness or like a panic attack happen. And some even claim to feel an invisible hand pushing them away, or falling into like a trance-like state that only breaks once they're outside of J Ward. They've felt bites, they've had icy breath on their skin, and then there's the slow rhythmic banging, like someone is repeatedly slamming their head against the wall. Like, no thank you. No thank you. Then there's the superintendent's office, where there have been shadow figures seen, and there's a bitter taste that people get in their mouths. And this is due to, you know, like, if you believe it, the superintendent dying by suicide because he drank prussic acid. I don't know if that's how you say it, but it's hydrogen cyanide. And like, he did do that and die by suicide in there, but like, people getting the bitter taste. Yeah. Like,
also,
is it just because you know that he did that, yeah, you know?
But also, what a fucking horrible way to go.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. And then there's this ghost who's supposed to be the saddest ghost, and her name is Donna.
I swear, I was also about to just say that.
But also, old Margaret. And they believe that she's an old patient who came back, even though she didn't die there, but that's just where she felt most seen and loved. And that just breaks my heart, because I just told you about all the ways that they were like, when they're trial and error trying to find a cure, so-called cure. Now, remember Gary Webb, the one who, you know, self-mutilated like over 70 times. He is said to still haunt his old room, and people have heard him yell, get out. Another hotspot is the old morgue. And, you know, it's exactly as delightful as it sounds. Bodies were kept there awaiting autopsy, and many were dissected right there on the site. Now, some people
probably to cover up murders and stuff like that. Patients dying from like drug overdoses, meaning like from the staff drug overdoses, or dying from treatments and stuff like that. So yeah, they probably did do all of that in-house so they wouldn't have to explain it to anybody.
Right. People have seen Nurse Carrie there, or I guess this one just says a woman in a nurse's uniform, but I'm thinking it's Nurse Carrie with a Y. And they've seen a man in a long coat and a surgical mask. And he's like always near the autopsy table. And they've also smelled rotting meat, which just no thank you. And like most of the asylums I've covered too, the Airedale had tunnels because it had to have the underground passageways to move without disturbing some patients. And, you know, so just think about dark, narrow tunnels underneath an asylum, and that's a perfect scary movie. People have reported hearing disembodied footsteps, whispers, shadows darting ahead, you know, like their flashlight just always a second too late to like actually catch it, you know? And just like Carrie said, it kind of helped cover up some crimes because if something happened in like the J ward or the men's wing or anything like that, they could just easily roll them down in these tunnels to right. the morgue.
And even some staff not even be the wiser because yeah. probably all the staff wasn't bad.
Right. Of course. I mean, a lot of them weren't, but I know they were probably all overworked.
Hell, and they still are in hospitals mm-hmm. and in mental health institutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, locals do say that they can see odd lights flickering in windows when there's no power. They've heard sounds of crying when they walked by it late at night, and they have seen a figure by the fence. But when we think back on Iredell's story, it's like we always say, the truth is scarier than the afterlife yeah. part of it, because it's these people who lived and probably died there who weren't evil or dangerous or anything. They were just misunderstood and mistreated. And, you know, it's just like...
which exacerbated their symptoms because they were in really terrible mm-hmm. environments, probably with no routine or no one that understood what they were going through or anything like that. So their symptoms were probably magnified.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always so sad to think about the people who were there against their will, who didn't even know what was happening, you know, and then to be forced with the criminally insane, to be forced with people who you don't share their symptoms and stuff. And you do hear someone banging their head against the wall 24/7. And like you said, like then it kind of the environment you're in kind of like molds you into who you're mm-hmm. going to be. So that is all I have for the Iredell Lunatic Asylum in Victoria, Australia.
Dang, that's awful.
It really is.
I just saw a TikTok today or yesterday, and it was a woman whose husband had been in psychosis and like had been in, I think, like 3 or maybe even 5 hospital stays in the last 45 days. And it was like just showing like how terrible our mental health system is. And it's like, it's still a problem, you know? And he had, her mm-hmm. husband had a black eye because another patient had assaulted him and stuff. And it's like, it's so bad still. So it's like, imagine what it was like back then with literally no rules, no regulations, no one protecting the patients that lived there. And because it's so bad now, and we do have more understanding and more rules and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Dang. Sad stories this week.
It really is. You know, I'm just a sad girl.
Oh, God. The happiest you've ever been, but still sad.
I know. What the heck? I feel like on Fried Green Tomatoes, Kathy Bates' character, mm-hmm. like when she's like sad and she's talking to Iggy or not yeah. Iggy, but you think it's Iggy the whole time or whatever. But she's like eating her emotions. She's like crying all the time and she cries at like the simplest thing. And it's just like, that's me. The most random thing. Oh my God. Speaking of crying, y'all, I watched a movie because Tiffany was like, hey, I'm watching this movie and it's really good. And it's from Tyler Perry. It's on Netflix and it's called Straw. And it's got Taraji P. Henson or Hanson. I think it's Henson, which that lady can act so mm-hmm. freaking much. Like, God, I love her. But that movie. You know, like when I cry, my eyes like swell because like I'm allergic to my own fucking tears. But I blubbered so much. Birdie was looking at me sideways I was like, oh, I'm going to go to bed. I'll finish this later. No, I had to stay up. It was like John Q level crying. Oh, my God. It was freaking Fox and the Hound level crying. Well, sadly,
not up.
Oh, it was just so sad. Like, I was enraged. I was sad. I was all the things. So, like, it is a good movie, but go in knowing that, like, if you are an emotional person, you're going to get emotional. So if you need a good cry, like sometimes, you know, you just need it, watch Straw.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back for you?
Yeah, like that's really why it's called that, though. It's a single mom. She was having the no good Alexander worst day ever, no whatever good, it's called. Bad day. Yes. And it's like, this is the straw that broke her, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know that I can watch that.
No, and it's all in one day, so
don't do those movies. Well, thank you so much for the recommendation. And if you want in on our Discord server, well, you got to join Patreon. So you're also going to get an extra episode, a freaking week, and so much more. So head on to patreon.com/theapcpodcast. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.